Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Jonathan Chait, who is a writer for the New York Magazine. He has extensively profiled Paul Ryan, who was just chosen by Mitt Romney as his vice president on the Romney-Ryan R&R ticket. We will discuss why someone who has been a Washington insider with little to no experience in the public sector, who voted for TARP and the budget-busting prescription drug bill, is the darling of the Tea Party. Then we'll look into the source of the Ryan family wealth, which comes from oil and gas extraction by hydraulic fracturing or fracking in the state of Oklahoma. Karen Webb, an Oklahoma-based journalist and regular contributor to the Oklahoma Observer, joins us to discuss how Paul Ryan's father-in-law, Dan Little, manages the family business for his nephew, Congressman Dan Boren, having signed 325 oil and gas leases between 2005 and 2011 for the family, who are heavily involved in fracking. Then finally, we will look into what is being done in the state of Pennsylvania to overcome voting restrictions that a Republican leader in the legislature boasted will deliver the state of Pennsylvania for Mitt Romney. Will Bunch, an award-winning senior writer with the Philadelphia Daily News, joins us to discuss how many of the million voters who have been suppressed will get their voting rights back before November. Joining us now is Jonathan Chait, who is a writer for the New York Magazine. He was previously a senior editor at the New Republic and a former assistant editor of the American Prospect. He's extensively profiled Congressman Paul Ryan for New York Magazine. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Chait.
Thank you.
And the tweet, you congratulated Paul Ryan. Did he tweet back and say, now he's Mr. Ryan?
Yeah, that's a story that I'd heard for a while, that a reporter who knew him well before he was a member of Congress congratulated him and said, congratulations, Paul, and he said, it's Mr. Ryan to you now, and apparently said this in all seriousness.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So do you think, though, that I take it that Mitt Romney chose him early August when he got back from his somewhat ill-fated trip to Europe, and that was apparently the first thing he decided when he got back was to pick Paul Ryan. Is this a case, though, since most of the conventional wisdom is that Romney's shoring up his right-wing base and Paul Ryan is the darling of the Tea Party, it would seem to me that if the candidate for the Republican Party is still spending his time shoring up his own base rather than reaching out to the center and to the moderates who basically decide American elections, wouldn't that suggest that he's in trouble?
Yeah, I think that conventional wisdom is at best half right. I don't think it's a gambit to shore up his right-wing base. I think Romney has all the enthusiasm he needs from conservatives. He has all the turnout, all the money he needs from conservatives. And I don't actually think that's what he's going for. I think what he's trying to do with Ryan is to shake up the game with some dramatic news-grabbing pick, number one. And Ryan is a major national political figure. Number two, I think he's trying to create a narrative in which Romney's campaign is substantive, focused on the issues, and Obama is wallowing in negative, nasty personal attacks. And Ryan is pretty far right substantively, but he's quite the master at creating an image of himself as completely earnest, uninterested in politics themselves, and just sort of a good guy in the emblem of all that high-minded substantive debate ought to be. Now, I think that image is largely, well, probably a word I can't use on the radio, but he's very, very good at that. So I think that's a big part of the pick.
Well, one of the strange things about politics is that perceptions seem to be everything, particularly on the right. I mean, Ronald Reagan was a divorced Hollywood actor, and he ran against a Christian lay preacher from Georgia, and yet the right-wing family values Christian right chose Reagan. And in this case, right, the Tea Party are choosing a guy to carry their mantle. And after all, Vice President Cheney said that he worships the ground that Paul Ryan walks on. This is a guy that voted for the TARP fund and voted for one of the huge boondoggles, which was a prescription drug benefit.
Right. I don't think that the Tea Party movement is fundamentally opposed to TARP. I mean, I think it's a strong issue amongst the activist base.
But isn't that how they started? Wasn't that the primary motivating factor to start the Tea Party, was the outrage over TARP?
Well, no, I think it was the outrage over Obama, just plain Obama. Uh-huh. I don't think you had these rallies and this movement back when the bailout passed. Otherwise, it never would have passed. And Ryan was as you say, a passionate advocate of it, and there was opposition, but no, the Tea Party is basically another name for the Republican base, and the Republican base is a partisan.
Well, how does he do it then, in the sense that he comes across and he's defined himself, as you have written, as a blue-collar, regular guy in the Reagan Democrat Joe the Plumber mold?
Right.
My understanding is that his family were quite well off, but mostly his wife's family are extremely well off
right.
in the oil and gas business. His
yep.
father-in-law handles all of the gas leases for the Boron family, including the congressman who's just quitting. They're huge in the fracking business.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he do it? I mean, we've already got essentially a 1%er at the top of the ticket,
yeah.
and yet this guy comes across as an average Joe.
Well, it's a skill. I mean, he's a skilled politician, and that's part of what skilled politicians do. George W. Bush was very, very good at this, right? I mean, he was the wealthy heir to a political dynasty who put himself forward to America as a rancher. You actually had people in the press saying that he was born on this ranch that he sort of bought for his campaign. You know, a pickup driving guy.
The virtual ranch, right?
That's a bit what Paul Ryan does, right? His image is all about bow hunting in Wisconsin, and very frequently described as coming from a blue collar town. Which is true that the town itself is blue collar, but his family is not. You could just as accurately say that Mitt Romney comes from the blue collar state of Michigan, but you know that's not an accurate way to think about Romney's background, and neither is it with Ryan.
Again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Chait, who is a writer for The New York Magazine, and he's previously a senior editor at The New Republic and a former assistant editor of The American Prospect, and he's extensively profiled Congressman Paul Ryan for New York Magazine. And, of course, we remember the footage of an angry voter collaring Newt Gingrich, saying, "You're an embarrassment. What you did to Paul Ryan was unforgivable," with Gingrich quivering. That is a kind of iconic moment for Ryan. And what do you think, though, about the Democrats' apparent and I think somewhat obvious line of attack against Ryan, which will be try to make him into a kind of right-wing bogeyman, like Clinton successfully did with Gingrich?
Right. Well, Ryan is much more politically talented than Gingrich. Gingrich was not likable. He didn't have political talent. Gingrich came from a strong Republican district where Republicans would always win and never really had to win over swing voters. Ryan is a different story. Ryan comes from a moderate district and has won strong support. So he's got real political talent. On the other hand, substantively, as that anecdote sort of suggests, Ryan is substantively to the right of Gingrich. Gingrich called Ryan's proposal, his budget plan, right-wing social engineering. It was far too radical for even Gingrich. But as the anecdote also suggests, that vision had become so central to the Republican Party's conception of what it ought to stand for that it was no longer possible to criticize Ryan in any terms whatsoever, and you would infuriate the base by doing so. So I think this suggests that anecdote is a very interesting one. I do have it in my New York Magazine story, and I think it tells us about how powerful Ryan has become within the Republican Party, how radical he is even compared to previous generations of radicals, and hints at his political talents.
Well, your article does get into the ideology, and what you've just told us, I think, is really central, isn't it? The extent to which this is a huge sea change for the Republicans, and they're going further to the right than under Goldwater in terms of this, particularly this kind of libertarian right-wing and Ayn Randian kind of notion that apparently informs Congressman Ryan. There's a great quote in your article in the New York Magazine, Jonathan Chait, of a letter that Ludwig von Mises wrote to Ayn Rand, basically summing up her philosophy, quoting, "You have the courage to tell the masses what no politician told them. You are inferior, and all the improvements in your conditions, which you simply take for granted, you owe to the efforts of men who are better than you."
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's that makes Marie Antoinette look like a piker. I mean,
Rind isn't going to be using lines like that as a stump.
No.
But Rand really is a formative intellectual influence on Paul Ryan, and Ryan has said this repeatedly until fairly late in his political career, when he became high profile enough that this became a liability for him, and then he began to disavow his association with Rand, but really in a sort of lawyerly and weaselly way, where he would basically, you know, what he was really saying is that, well, she was an atheist and I'm not an atheist, so I'm not a follower of her philosophy in the sense of believing everything she says. But clearly, her moral economic worldview left a very deep imprint on Ryan's brain. And the core of that worldview is what I've described as a kind of inverted Marxism. It basically sees politics as an economic struggle between a virtuous class and a parasite class. The difference is that the classes are completely the opposite in Rand's view as Marx's worldview. In Rand's view, all good, all wealth, all progress comes from the efforts of the heroic rich, the business leaders, the innovators, the people who give us everything, and the parasites who live off their greatness are sort of the enemy class. And politics is a struggle to prevent these parasites from stealing and looting the wealth of the rich. And so in this worldview, progressive taxation and efforts by the government to redistribute wealth from the rich to the poor are the fundamental problem in politics and the fundamental thing that has to be stopped. And that is what Paul Ryan's career is all about.
But it's also what seems to be the developing theme of the Republican campaign, if not the obvious theme of the Republican campaign. There's no question that there are echoes of Reagan's notion of the welfare queens, that we have to take the handcuffs off the millionaires and put them on the welfare queens. This whole business about the way that they've completely misrepresented the Obama administration's waiver program for welfare is entirely designed to get white working class blue-collar people angry along the lines of what you just described.
I think that's right, and I think the reason they're doing that is that the sort of hardcore libertarian ideology in which Ryan is steeped doesn't have a real popular basis. People may oppose government in the abstract, but most of it they favor in the particular. Now, the exceptions to this, and this has really always been true, are government programs that they see as benefiting virtuous middle-class people like themselves. So Reagan, in the 60s, warned that the establishment of Medicare would lead to, you know, socialism and the end of freedom in America, and very much like people like Ryan warn about Obamacare. But by 1980, once the program had been established and once Reagan ran for president, it was no longer possible to do that. And so he had to isolate government programs that were seen in a different light, as seen as not benefiting the middle class, as benefiting poor people, people who hadn't, in the middle class's perception, you know, earned the right to be on the government dole. And so I think Romney has kind of started to reprise those themes.
Well, curious enough, in the photo op yesterday in Virginia with both candidates, Mitt Romney did talk about how Ryan will help elevate the debate, make it more bipartisan, talked about his bipartisan credentials, which I wonder how much that's to do with the fact that his wife's cousin is a Democrat. I mean, I know Ron Wyden joined him in one of his reform of healthcare plan, but the long and the short of it is that it seems that we do have a focus on the better angels of our nature that Romney mentioned. I find that hard to take, given that I recently spoke with Sister Simone Campbell, who took this caravan of nuns and went to the Janesville office of Congressman Ryan, and of course he wasn't there, but basically to confront him about what will happen with his Medicaid and Medicare reform that'll probably, by most measures, put another 30 million people without any health care coverage, which, of course, is the opposite trajectory of what Obama's trying to do with so-called Obamacare. So how can they do that? How can they appeal to the better angels of our nature and at the same time do the reverse of what these clearly Christian women who are doing the Lord's work see the picture as?
Well, it's how you define the better angels of our nature, I guess. You know, and the truth is, Ryan is, by all accounts, a very friendly, very personable guy. People get along with him. He speaks about politics in a very detailed way, although I think this leads to some confusion. He presents himself as a wonk, but he's not someone who's driven by numbers. He's someone who uses numbers to bolster his preconceived ideological notions, which are not subject to revision. So when Ryan has been warning for 3 years that we are on the precipice of mass hyperinflation, and despite the complete absence of any signs of this happening, he hasn't changed his underlying views with healthcare spending. He's claimed that Obamacare could not possibly bend the cost curve because it's government. Government doesn't work. Government is bureaucratic. Government must fail. Despite the fact that, you know, every advanced country in the world has both universal health insurance, more government control in their healthcare system than we do, and vastly lower healthcare costs. But in Ryan's mind, it's simply an ideological fact. Now, he can quote a lot of numbers to cite his view, but again, you know, these numbers all come from the kind of right-wing agitprop think tank universe, which doesn't operate by the kind of intellectual standards of academia or even a think tank like Brookings, which is more open to, you know, contrary evidence.
Well, of course, Mitt Romney recently in Israel mentioned that the Israeli national healthcare system gets healthcare costs down to 8% of GDP, whereas the United States is up to 18% of the GDP.
Right.
An odd endorsement of single payer, yeah, on the part. But isn't the subtext again, though, the idea that the deficit, they're trying to appeal to the average kind of blue-collar Joe the plumber by saying, you know, you're trying to pay your household bills and the government is just printing money and being profligate. But I think the subtext is the government's being profligate, propping up a bunch of parasites. Isn't that
That's absolutely right. Yeah, and I mean, and if you did want to point to a single issue, as we sort of mentioned before, that did spark this Tea Party rebellion, it was the notion floated by the Obama administration of doing something to help underwater homeowners. And Rick Santelli's rant on CNBC was sort of the moment that started where he proposed this Tea Party movement, was kind of the start of this, right? And he was saying, like, you are a virtuous homeowner, you've paid your bills, and why do you want to bail out these irresponsible homeowners who haven't? So that sentiment has always been at the root of it. And of course, that was a huge part of the opposition to the healthcare law. And they were attacking Obama for cutting Medicare, which he did, to finance universal healthcare. And so basically it was that idea. It was, we've paid our dues. This is a virtuous government program. This is a justified government program for people who deserve it, giving our money to people who don't deserve it, the people who don't have healthcare, who shouldn't be getting our help.
Well, just in closing, Jonathan Chait, of course, the conversation we're having is not about Romney's taxes, right? So
yeah.
To that extent, this is working, right?
Well, it is. But, you know, the gambit by Obama about talking about Romney's taxes and business history was always a setup. It was always the jab leading to the strike. And the strike was to tie him to the Ryan agenda. Now, they actually did focus groups earlier in the year, and they found basically that the substance of this agenda seemed so implausibly extreme to these undecided voters that they actually couldn't believe that someone like Romney would support it. So the purpose of this campaign was to define his character in such a way that those attacks would become believable, to paint him as this rich, self-interested man who only cared about other rich people, and then you could believe that he would support this agenda. So they're really escaping the jab, but they're really moving right into the haymaker punch. So on the other hand, like I said, they are bringing aboard a very, very talented politician to help sell it. So that's the asset. It's not all downside, but they're taking a huge risk by even more tightly embracing something which was, again, the ultimate focus of the Obama attack campaign.
Well, but how long do you think that they can get away with being both the arsonist and the fireman, in the sense that, you know, for example, as you point out in your article, the legendary Paul Ryan in the New York magazine, Jonathan Chait, that Grover Norquist said that nobody has done more in recent years to prevent the passage of the bipartisan debt agreement than Paul Ryan, who was on the Erskine Simpson-Bowles commission, and if he scuttled that, at least turned against it, and
right.
That leads you to the broader question, which is again a subtext which the Obama administration have never really enunciated, but I think it's pretty clear that the Republicans, just quoting Mitch McConnell, have an investment in destroying Obama, and the means by which they do that is making sure there's no economic recovery until the election.
Yeah, well, I should just briefly clarify that point. Norquist, in my New York Magazine article, didn't say that. What I said was that no one, with the possible exception of Norquist, had done more to scuttle
bipartisan agreements. I did misread it, yeah.
Yeah, with the possible exception of Norquist. And I'm not sure that's true. Norquist is known in the press as the guy who's been killing these agreements. Ryan, by contrast, is known as an advocate of these agreements. He goes around on television lambasting Obama for not more fully supporting the Simpson-Bowles bipartisan deficit agreement, even though Ryan voted against that agreement and it scuttled several other attempts to reach bipartisan agreements. Because Ryan, you know, is not a bipartisan. You know, he's not in his party center, and he's not really a deal maker. So it's a pretty astonishing feat of spin that he's managed to create this image for himself.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Jonathan Chait, who's a writer for The New York Magazine. He previously was a senior editor at The New Republic and a former assistant editor of The American Prospect. He's extensively profiled Congressman Paul Ryan for New York Magazine. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the source of the Paul Ryan family's money, which comes from fracking in Oklahoma.